And so this morning I wanted to speak about the Tefillah of Nishmas, which appears in the Siddur at the end of Psukei Dezimra on Shabbos and Yom Tov. I want to go through it, talk about its origins a little bit, and try to understand it. And then we'll speak a little bit about how, in more recent years, it seems to be applied and said in many contexts other than the original context itself. First of all, the Tefillah of Nishmas, Nishmas Kochai, as we know, appears in the Shabbos and Yom Tov davening at the very end of Psukei Dezimra, the very end of the various chapters of Tehillim, which we say in preparation for the reading of Kriya Shema and the davening of Shemoneh Esrei. The Chayei Adam, Rabbi Avraham Danzig, who lived in the 1800s and was one of the foremost Balei Halacha, author of a Halacha Sefer from around that time, the Chayei Adam writes that it's important for us to realize that Nishmas is actually part of the bracha of Yishtabach. We know that on a typical weekday, when, if we have the opportunity to say Psukei Dezimra, the way Psukei Dezimra is set up is that there's a bracha which introduces Psukei Dezimra, that's the bracha of Baruch Sha'amar. There are chapters of Tehillim that are recited in the middle. And then there's a bracha of Yishtabach, which is the concluding bracha of Psukei Dezimra. That's parenthetically why it's important not to talk in the middle of Psukei Dezimra. Good, not talking in the middle of davening in general, but particularly in the middle of Psukei Dezimra, because Psukei Dezimra is all one unit. There's a bracha that comes beforehand, the bracha that comes afterwards, and all of the chapters of Tehillim that are in the middle. On Shabbos, the bracha of Yishtabach is extended to include Nishmas Kol Chai. So again, if you look in the Siddur, so there are a bunch of paragraphs which in the Siddur are broken up into different paragraphs that are really one long bracha. We have the long paragraph Nishmas, then Hakel B'Satsumos Uzecha, Shochenad Morom V'Kodosh Shemo U'V'Makalos Rivavos Amchaveis Yisrael, and finally the paragraph of Yishtabach. Even though in the Siddur, those are all presented as different paragraphs, in point of fact, the Chayei Adam is telling us that's really just one long bracha. And it doesn't make sense to say part of the bracha and not the other part of the bracha. So the Chayei Adam says that if a person is davening on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and they want to say an abbreviated Psukei Dezimra, right? Sometimes we don't have time to say all of Psukei Dezimra. Sometimes we don't have the custom to say, for women in particular, we don't have the custom to say all of Psukei Dezimra. So during the week, we might just say Baruch Sha'amar, Ashrei, and Yishtabach. Or we might say a little bit more, Baruch Sha'amar, Ashrei, and the five Havalukas, and then Yishtabach. So says the Chayei Adam, if you're davening on Shabbos, so you should say Baruch Sha'amar, Ashrei, or whatever else you're going to say in the middle, even if you abbreviate it. But when you come to finish off Psukei Dezimra, you should start from Nishmas, not Yishtabach. It's better to say fewer chapters of Tehillim to give you those extra couple of moments to say Nishmas, because on Shabbos, Nishmas is really the full recitation of the Bracha of Yishtabach. Right? So that's a point, a halakhic point that's made by the Chayei Adam, which helps us realize that Nishmas and Yishtabach are really connected to one another. We'll come back to that point a little bit later from a hashkafic perspective, from a philosophical perspective, to understand what the connection is between Nishmas and Yishtabach. Who wrote Nishmas? So, I don't think there's anyone here in the room, as far as I know, but it was certainly one thing we know is that the basic text of Nishmas goes back a very, very long time. The Gemara already, in the Sefer Pesachim, mentions the Tefillah of Nishmas. The Gemara is trying to figure out how we finish off the Seder on the night of Pesach. And the Gemara mentions that, you know, one thing which we say at the end of the Seder, again, if you're up that late, at the end of the Seder, one of the things we say at the end of the Seder is actually the Tefillah of Nishmas. The Gemara says that this is what the Mishnah means when it talks about something called the Birkas Hashir, the Bracha of Song. What's the Bracha of Song? So the Gemara says that it could refer to Nishmas. The Zohar also makes reference to Nishmas, right? So that all arguably as well is a very old source. Plus, there's a very, very interesting, fascinating tradition that states that the the author of Mishnah was someone by the name of Shimon. If you look into the text of Mishnah, it's possible that the name Shimon is spelled out at one point in an acrostic. So the question is, who is Shimon? So some of the early sources say, well, we find that there was one of the Zugos, one of the early leaders of the Jewish people in the time that the Beit HaMikdash still stood, named Shimon ben Shetach. Right? We mentioned Shimon ben Shetach in Pirkei Avos. So some suggest that Shimon ben Shetach, again, goes back, you know, many, many years, you know, to the time of the Tanaim, was the author of Nishmat Kochai. That would put Nishmat's composition very, very early, while the second Beit HaMikdash was still standing. Some suggest that what's perhaps an even more fascinating and intriguing possibility, that Shimon, who's mentioned in Nishmat, or alluded to in Nishmat, is not actually Shimon ben Shetach, but actually an individual who's better known to the world as Peter. And here we find a very, very fascinating idea, which, again, maybe it's correct, maybe it's not correct, but it's certainly a very fascinating idea. We know that one of the early major figures in the church was a person by the name of Peter. You know, all of the individuals who were involved in the early Christian church, including the founder of the Christian church, Otso HaIsh himself, were all Jewish. They were all, you know, nice Jewish yeshiva boys who sort of got a strange idea into their head and went off in a different direction. There's an ancient tradition that Peter, whose Hebrew name was Shimon, was actually sent by the rabbis to infiltrate this early sect of Christianity, make sure that they would veer away from Torah and Mitzvah, so that they would no longer be seen as a Jewish sect, but rather as a totally non-Jewish religion. Peter Shimon was apparently successful in this endeavor, whereas in the beginning of Christianity was considered to be just a group of Jews with funny ideas. As the religion developed, it became clear that it was a separate religion, and the rabbis wanted that, so goes the story, because they wanted to make sure that no Jews would fall into Christianity. Peter was this double agent who infiltrated the ranks of the church and ultimately moved them away from any connection to Judaism. And you should just realize that even though this Peter, his whole life was undercover and nobody really knew the tremendous service that he was doing for Klal Yisrael, you should know that he was really a big tzaddik, and he wrote Nishmas Kolchai. That's a tradition that goes back hundreds of years, that is in fact the author of Nishmas. So, maybe yeah, maybe no, you know, it's hard for us to really evaluate that, but that is certainly a fascinating tradition associated with the authorship of Nishmas Kochai, and one way or the other certainly indicates that it's a very, very early tefillah, you know, was offered at a very, very early period in time, again, going back to the period when the second Beit HaMikdash was still standing. Nishmas is often described as a particularly beautiful tefillah. And the truth is, if you go through it, it really is a very, very heart-stirring tefillah. Really for the following reason. Nishmas expresses the idea that almost by definition, every single part of our body yearns to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right. Nishmas is entirely shevach. It's all about praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no element of bakasha. There's no element of asking things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's entirely 100% an expression of how much we need to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how much we need to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how every fiber of our being naturally should want to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Some of the language which expresses this idea is as follows: How came, therefore, Evarim Shipilag Tobanu, the limbs which you distributed to us, the Ruach and the Shama Shnafato Biatenu, And the spirit and the soul which you blew into our nostrils, the lashon asher shamta b'fino, and the tongue which you put into our mouths, hein heim yodu vivarchu vishabchu vifaru viromu viarisu viartisu viamlichu eshimcha malkeinu. They will praise and bless and extol, many, many verbs for praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They will praise your name, our King. Every mouth will give thanks to you. Every tongue will swear allegiance to you. Every knee will bow to you. And every back that straight up will bend down and prostrate itself before you. All hearts will fear you, and all the innards of the person will of their own accord sing to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kadova Shekostov, as the Pasuk says in Tehillim, all of my bones will say, quote unquote, Hashem Yichamocha, Hashem, who is like you. So this, you know, in very, very poetic terms, is describing how the entire body, every organ in the body, every bone in the body, every part of the body, is just naturally moved to want to express its thanks and its praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, when you think about that, and just think how a person naturally is just almost drawn like a magnet to want to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very, very beautiful image which is expressed by Nishmas. Other beautiful phrases in Nishmas speak to the fact that as much as we're drawn to want to praise you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can never really do a sufficient job. We can never praise you enough for everything that you've done for us. And here we have the famous lines, Ilufinu Mole Shira Kayam, if our mouths were filled up with song like the sea, Ulushonenu Rina Kamon Galav, our tongues, if they were filled with praise like the many waves, the Sitzoseinu Shevach Kemercha Ve'Rokia, if our lips were filled with praise like the expanse of the heavens, the Einenu Me'iros Hashemesh V'Hayoreach, if our eyes were as bright as the sun and the moon, the Odeinu Frusos Tiknishrei Shamayim, even if we could stretch out our arms and our hands to give praise to you, like the eagle stretches its wings, Draglenu Kalos Ka'ayolos, even if we could run as fast as the gazelles, Ein anachnu maspikim lahodos l'cha Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu u'levarech et shemecha. We would not be able to properly thank you, Hashem. We would not be able to thank properly bless you. Al achas mi'elef alfei alofim v'ridei rivivos ka'onim hatovo shel sitzoim avoseinu v'imanu. We would not be able to express our thanks for the thousands and tens of thousands of benefits which you have bestowed upon us and bestowed upon our forefathers. We go on to speak about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu historically took our forefathers out of Egypt, but it's not just that he did things for our forefathers, for our ancestors many, many years ago. He's constantly doing things for us. He's constantly enabling us to live on a regular basis, enables us to walk around, enables us to get out of bed in the morning, enables us to speak, enables us to awaken. Everything that the fact that we're able to function throughout the day, and so many tiny little things that we're able to do, are all the direct results of the benevolence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, in very, very poetic terms, Nishmas expresses this idea and says, therefore, we almost have no choice but to sing your praises, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A very, very beautiful expression of thanks to Hashem. Why do we only say Nishmas as part of the Psukei Dezimra on Shabbos and Yom Tov? So this is an issue that's addressed by the Rishonim, the medieval authorities, in their commentaries on the Siddur. And they seem to offer one of two different types of explanations. One explanation is that Nishmas is particularly appropriate to Shabbos and Yom Tov because Nishmas focuses on the existence of the Neshama Yisera, the extra soul that the Gemara says that we're granted on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and it's the neshama yisera, the extra soul, and it's that extra soul which enables us to be able to say Mishnah. Some of the Mepharshim on the Siddur say that the idea of this extra soul, the neshama yisera, is referenced in the very first line of Mishnah. What do we say? Nishmas kochai tevarech eshimcha. The neshama, the soul of every living thing, should bless your name. The ruach kol basar, and the spirit of every flesh, of all flesh, tefarer usiromein zichucha malkeinu talmid, will praise and elevate your mention, our king, forever and ever. On one level, these two phrases are just really saying the same thing in different words. Nishmat kochai tevarech eshimcha, ruach kol basar tefarer usiromein zichucha malkeinu. Right? You find oftentimes in poetry that the same idea is expressed just in different words, just, you know, that's the idea of how poetry works. But say many of them a question, no, you're misunderstanding those lines if you say it's just a repetition. Nishmat kochai ziruach kol basar, the soul of every living thing, and the spirit of all flesh, is a reference to a double neshama, to a double soul. What's that double soul? That's the neshama yisera. That's the extra soul which is associated with Shabbos. And to continue that idea a little bit, it seems what these mechoshim are saying is as follows. During the week, we can't really properly appreciate how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us. You know, during the week, we're laden down with all kinds of burdens, you know, physical and psychological. You know, we don't have a lot of energy and or ability to focus on how many wonderful things HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us constantly. But come Shabbos, and whatever the Neshama Yisera is exactly, you know, however one defines what this extra soul is, it somehow gives us the ability to see with more clarity how we really owe a debt of tremendous gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the recitation of Nishmas and Shabbos and Yom Tov is directly a result of this Neshama Yisera, which is implanted to us into us on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And that gives us the vision, the clarity, to be able to appreciate how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us, and, you know, how much we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of, you know, having to sing His praises. According to that explanation, it would seem that reciting Nishmas on any time other than Shabbos and Yom Tov would simply not be appropriate. Because, in other words, Nishmas is all about how the Neshama Yisera, the extra Neshama God gave us on Shabbos and Yom Tov, gives us a vision that we don't normally have, you know, to let's say, conclude this session by having everybody say Nishmas together. It would seem, according to this line of reasoning, would simply not be appropriate. Until it's Shabbos and you have the Neshama Yisera, you can't, you know, you don't have the insight to be able to say Nishmas. Conversely, there's another line of reasoning in the Rishonim that explains the recitation of Nishmas on Shabbos and Yom Tov in much simpler and, you know, more practical terms. It's not a function of the Neshama Yisera that we say Nishmas on Shabbos and Yom Tov. It just happens to be we have more time on Shabbos and Yom Tov. You know, we're not rushing during our davening, so we have more time to reflect upon this truth that God does wonderful things for us, and we go, oh God, an eternal debt of gratitude. So on Shabbos, we, you know, that's always true. You know, it's true during the week as well. But on Shabbos, we should have the time and the peace of mind to be able to reflect on that idea. It would come out, according to that second explanation, that if one were afforded that amount of time on another occasion, so it might be appropriate to say Nishmas even not on Shabbos and Yom Tov, if we were to have the peace of mind to be able to reflect on that truism that, you know, we need to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In recent years, right, so in recent years, and again, I'm not 100% sure where all of these minhagim and customs come from, because clearly if you go back hundreds of years, Nishmas was written, you know, to be recited on Shabbos and Yom Tov specifically, but in recent years it seems like Nishmas has enjoyed popularity you know, it burst out of the Sukkot Zimra part of the Shabbos Siddur, and is being recited on all kinds of different occasions. It's recited, again, Hatzos. It's associated with Perek Shira in particular. People say the Perek Shira, or parts of the Perek Shira, and then they say Mishmas at the end of that. It's associated, the Chmana Litzlan, with somebody on a deathbed. There are all kinds of different occasions which are associated with Mishmas, which have nothing to do with Shabbos and Yom Tov. So I think, again, without, you know, obviously everyone should follow whatever stock they have in terms of these things, but it would seem offhand that the propriety of saying Mishmas on occasions other than Shabbos and Yom Tov might go back to this debate or these two perspectives in the earlier Mefarshim as to why Mishmas was instituted for Shabbos and Yom Tov. If it's simply a fact, if it's simply a function of the fact that Shabbos and Yom Tov we have more time and we can reflect better. So you know what? If you set yourself up in a situation where you're going to have time to reflect and really internalize these ideas that are in Mishmas, so okay, so fine. So it doesn't have to be Shabbos and Yom Tov specifically. The association of Mishmas and Perek Shira conceptually makes a lot of sense. What's Perek Shira all about? How everybody, everything, praises the Ribbono Shel Olam. The frogs are praising Hashem, and the scorpions are praising Hashem, and everybody's praising Hashem. So that's really the theme of Mishmas on a certain level as well. In other words, naturally, the human being is drawn like a magnet to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kol Atzmosai Tomana, Hashem Yichamocha. All of my bones are saying, Hashem, who is like you? All right, so, you know, if you can get yourself into the right frame of mind by saying Perek Shira, by going to the Kosa, by being Rachmana Litzlan, you know, in the presence of somebody who's at the end of life, and, you know, recognizing in those moments that life is, you know, that we lose sight of the important things in life all too often. Okay, so even during the week, you can come to the state of affairs to be able to say Mishmas. However, if you hold that Mishmas was instituted for Shabbos and Yom Tov because of its connection to the Neshama Yetzirah, because of its connection to the extra soul, and that idea of the extra soul is mentioned in the very beginning of Mishmas, then I'm not sure that one would be so quick to be able to say Mishmas on other occasions. Maybe it's really a Shabbos and Yom Tov thing, and maybe it's a little bit presumptuous to say Mishmas on occasions other than Shabbos and Yom Tov itself. Again, ask your local Orthodox rabbi, I'm just putting it on the table. Again, it would seem that the different perspectives in explaining why Mishmas was instituted for Shabbos and Yom Tov should have some bearing on these more recent customs to say Mishmas on other occasions. The Rishonim held Mishmas in incredible regard. And some of the medieval commentaries even wrote poems to introduce Mishmas. In other words, Mishmas wasn't, you know, it was so holy and so special that, you know, you couldn't just like go straight into saying Mishmas. You needed a warm-up before you could actually say Mishmas. So there were numerous poems that were written in the Middle Ages to be recited in shul before they would actually say Mishmas, you know, like to get you in the mood to be able to say this incredible tefillah. One of the most famous of those introductions was written by the Ibn Ezra, with Avraham Ibn Ezra, whose commentary is printed in the Chumashim. And we may know his poem, which he wrote as an introduction, but we don't say it anymore as an introduction to Mishmas. There's a zemer that's printed in the Zmiras books for Friday night, Samo Nafshi Lelokim Lekel Chai, Libi Uvasari Yiraninu Lekel Chai. My soul yearns for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right. So we say it, those of us who say it, is printed in the Sidurim to say Friday night, right? But we'll see in a minute, if you just pay attention to the words in Samo Nafshi, it's clearly written as an introduction to Mishmas, right? So what do we say? Someone actually lelokim lekel chai, my soul yearns for Hashem. Libi uvesari yiranu lekel chai, my heart and my flesh will sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, even in those words that we should take from Tehillim, Libi uvesari yiranu lekel chai, we see echoes of the theme of Mishmas. What's the theme of Mishmas? I naturally, my body, you know, every part of my existence naturally just wants to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm drawn to Hashem like a magnet. So that tefillah was originally written to introduce Nishmas Kol Chai. How do I know that that's true? So just look at the very end of that tefillah. Esros L'chok Hapi, says the Ibn Ezra at the very end of Sama Nafshi, I will spread out my hands before you, the echod al afi, and I will bow down on my face, the eskach sp, at the time when I open up my mouth, the nishmas kol chai, to say nishmas kol chai. It doesn't get much more explicit than that. Right, so someone actually ends with that because, again, in the original composition of Sama Nafshi, that was then the lead-in to say Nishmas Kol Chai. In other words, I've said this whole poem, Sama Nafshi Lelokim L'Kel Chai, to warm myself up, you know, to get myself in the mood, to be able to say Nishmas, the Eftach Pi, the Nishmas Kol Chai. I'm now going to open up my mouth to say Nishmas. Right? Again, clearly that was the original place of Sama Nafshi. Again, our custom, for whatever reason in shul, is not to say these introductory poems, you know, to get us in the mood to say Nishmas. Maybe we feel that they're a hesek, maybe we feel that they're an interruption of some sort, I don't know. But we don't say them. But it was such a beautiful introduction, so they moved it to the Zmiros, you know, that we should say it Friday night, you know, to build ourselves up. So why Friday night, not Shabbos morning? So I thought, maybe, on Shabbos morning, it's too late. You said Nishmas already. So again, you can't, our custom is not to say Sama Nafshi right before Nishmas, which was the original composition of the Ibn Ezra. But at least if we're not going to say it right before Nishmas, we should say it sometime before Nishmas. So if we say it Friday night, at least we got ourselves in the mood. If you can keep the mood for a couple of hours, okay, if you can keep the mood for a couple of hours, that means you'll be all warmed up to be able to say Nishmas the following morning. You know, if we would have said it by Shabbos lunch, it would have been too late already because we would have said Nishmas already in the Shabbos morning davening. Okay, so a couple of more things about Nishmas. Nishmas makes a very ambitious claim upon what it is that we're required to do. And we say it, and sometimes we don't even pay attention to, oftentimes, almost always, we don't pay attention to what we're actually saying. But if we paid attention to Nishmas, the truth is Nishmas asks us to do something which is quite scary. This is a little bit further in the Nishmas, in the paragraph, Uvamachalos Rivavos Amcho Beis Yisrael, which again, as we explained, is all really part of the tefillah of Nishmas. So in that paragraph we say, Uvamachalos Rivavos Amcho Beis Yisrael, among the masses of the tens of thousands of your people, call yourself, your name, our king, is going to be praised in every generation with great singing. In other words, Jews come together and they sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, that's good. But then we go on to say as follows. Shekein Chovas Kol HaYitzurim, the obligation of all living things, is to do what? L'chonecha Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu l'hodos l'hallel l'shabeach l'fayar l'romei l'hadeh l'varech l'alei l'kalesh. All synonyms for praise. The obligation of all living things is to praise you, Hashem. And here comes the line. Al kol divrei shiros v'shishvichos David ben Yishai avdecha m'shichecha. The key word over here is al. Say al. Al means am. Yeah, that's generally what it means, but like many words in Hebrew, it means a bunch of different things. Al in this context means beyond, right? In other words, on top of, in the sense of, you know, in addition to, or even beyond, you know, superseding, right? Our obligation, says Nishmas, is to praise you even beyond the Tehillim of David HaMelech. Al kol divrei shiros v'shishvichos David ben Yishai avdecha m'shichecha. Meaning, basically, Nishmas is saying, if you sat down one day and said all of Tehillim, your obligation to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu would still not be fulfilled. That's what that line means. Al kol divrei shiros v'sishbuchos zavid ben yishai avducha m'shichecha. In fact, every creature, human and non-human, has an obligation to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu that goes beyond even reciting all of the Tehillim of David HaMelech. And the truth is, at that point, you kind of want to throw up your hands and say, okay, so I guess we're done, right? I mean, you know, even if I sat there Shabbos morning and said all of Tehillim from beginning to end and added many, many things, you know, I said all of the Shiros, the Sishbuchos, David Ben Ishai, I said all of the songs and the praises of David HaMelech, I would not be fulfilling my obligation to properly praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Alright, so that's depressing. Right? I'm sorry that I had to translate that for you. Maybe ignorance is bliss. Maybe it would have been better to just, you know, keep reading that phrase and not really appreciating what it fully means. But that is what it means. That's not, what I'm saying, it's not a versal or a chapel or something like that. That's just simply what the words mean. So how do we deal with that? So the Rishis Lezion answered that the answer to that question is actually the next line in Mishnah, which is a line which is familiar to us. Yishtabach Shimcha Lo'ad Malkeinu. Now, Yishtabach means will be praised. It's a passive voice. Right? Your name, our king, will be praised forever. It doesn't say Nishtabeach Shimcha Lo'ad Malkeinu, which would mean we praise your name. Yishtabach Shimcha Lo'ad Malkeinu means your name will be praised. And Sefer Soloveitchik, the fact that it's in the passive voice is a direct result of what we just said a moment ago. Really, our obligation is to praise you beyond even the entire Sefer Tehillim of David HaMelech, which again is just impossible. In other words, it's mission impossible that we're given in Nishmas to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu beyond what anyone could reasonably be expected to do. So at the end of the day, we say, look, we're going to try our best. But in the end of the day, we recognize that your name is praised, in the passive sense, beyond anything that we can possibly accomplish. You know, not perhaps, we lack the ability to praise you sufficiently, Hashem. So, Yishtabach Shimcha Lo'ad Malkeinu. Let's just acknowledge that your name is praised, even though we ourselves lack the ability to do that fully. It's just praised by itself, you know, it's beyond, we're going to try our best, but it's beyond our ability to properly praise Hashem in the way in which Hashem fully, you know, deserves to be praised. So they should point it out that this interpretation works particularly well if you daven Nusach Tzad. Because in Tzad, they put in one word on Shabbos before Yishtabach, Uzerchein, and therefore, Al kol divrei shiros v'sishbuchos zavid ben yishai avducha m'shichecha, uvechein yishtabach shimcha lo'ad malkeinu. And therefore, let your name be praised, our king. What's uvechein, and therefore? So that's the Rosh Hashanah, it's exactly this point. Right? We really have an obligation to praise you beyond what we're capable of doing. It's mission impossible. We can't do it. You know, we'd have to say Tehillim 1,000 times, and we still wouldn't be done with all of the praises that we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, Uvechein, therefore, Yishtabach Shimcha Lo'ad Malkeinu, let your name simply be praised on its own right. A couple of other interesting things to point out in Mishnah. So, we mentioned that there's a tradition that says that the author of Mishnah is a person by the name of Shimon. Again, Shimon ben Shetach, Shimon Peter, you know, and the different Shimons. So, the Avud Raham, one of the major commentaries on Siddur from the Middle Ages, makes another interesting suggestion. He says, in his opinion, the author of Nishmas was named Yitzchak, and interestingly enough, he wrote his wife's name into Nishmas as well. He was named Yitzchak, And his wife, says the Abu Draham, was named Rivka. So, how do you know that? So says the Abu Draham, if you look in the paragraph that begins, Shochein Ad, right? Shochein Ad, Mar of the Kadosh Shemo, the Chosuv Raminu Tzadikim Hashem, Yisharim Navos Sehila. Then we have four phrases. To see Yisharim Tithalo, in the mouths of the righteous ones, you are praised. Of Divrei Tzadikim Tisbarach, with the words of the Tzadikim, you are blessed. Of Lashon Chasidim Tisrama, with the lips, with the tongues of the Chasidim, you are elevated. With Kerev Kedoshim Tisadosh, and in the midst of the holy ones, you are sanctified. If you take the four words which describe different people who are praising Hashem, Yisharim Tzadikim Chasidim Kedoshim, it spells out Yitzchak. So some say that's a reference to Yitzchak Avinu. But the Yehuda Ram says, no, that's a reference to Yitzchak the author, whoever he is. We don't know who he is. Right? Shimon had an English name, Peter. You know, I don't know what Yitzchak's English name was. Isaac? I don't know. But Isidore, right? But Yitzchak, you know, Yitzchak, says the Yehuda Ram, is the author. That's the author. He put his name into Nishmas. And he put his wife's name into Nishmas, because if you look at the verbs, tishalo, tisbarach, tisromam, tiskadosh, and you take away the prefix, tis, right, you just start with the actual shorish, the actual root of each of those verbs, you have from tishalo a hey, from tisbarach a beis, from tisromam a resh, and from tiskadosh a kuf, rearrange the letters and spells out rizka. And that's if you daven Ashkenaz. If you daven Tzad, they made it even simpler for you, because those verbs are rearranged, so it's tisromam, tisbarach, tiskadosh, and tishalol in that order. So it spells, you don't even have to rearrange the letters, it spells out Rivka directly. So again, you go through, you figure Yitzchak Rivka, oh, I know who they are, yeah, they're in the Chumash, and Tarshish tells us. So says the Abu Draham, no. It's not Yitzchak and Rivka, Yitzchak Avinu and Rivka Imenu, it's Yitzchak the author, and he decided to put his wife, you know, into the composition of Nishmas as well. I guess this is a good thing for a woman here, you know. I mean, you never know. You might end up in a tefillah one day. I mean, that's a good thing. That's a very, you know, an interesting idea which is in there. Another interesting idea which is in Nishmas, which again we say all the time, but we don't always pay attention to it. So, towards the end of the long paragraph of Nishmas, there's a phrase that goes, Miyidmelach u'miyishvelach u'miyarochlach. Who can be compared to you? Who can be considered your equal? And who can be measured up to you? Hakel hagogol hagibor v'hanora kel elyon kone shemayim v'oretz. You are God who is great, mighty, and awesome. The God who is most high, who owns and created heaven and earth. Those are all phrases from Chumash. So let's start with the first phrase. Which is known to us from the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei, is actually a pasuk that's recited by Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim. Right? The pasuk in Chumash. Kel Elyon Kone Shemayim Va'aretz are phrases which we had in the Parashas HaShavua, not yesterday, but just a week ago, in Lech Lecha, when Avraham Avinu has an exchange and speaks with Avimelech, the king of Yerushalayim, who's really, according to Chazal, Shem ben Noach. So they describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in those terms. God is Kel Elyon, God the Most High, Kone Shemayim Va'aretz, you know, who owns or who created heaven and earth. Those phrases are actually part of a bracha which we say in Shul Friday night, which is called the bracha Achas Me'ein Sheva, a single bracha which is an encapsulation of the seven brachas of the Shabbos Shemoneh Esrei. There we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaKel HaGadol HaGibor HaNora HaKel Elyon Kone Shemayim Va'aretz, just like we do here in Nishmas. What's interesting here in Nishmas is that a few lines later, Nishmas explains what some of these terms mean, right? We have that phrase again, Hakel Hagadol Hagibor Vanora. If you go a little bit further in Nishmas, we find the phrase Hakel B'Satsumos Uzecha Hagadol B'Chvod Shemecha Hagibor lo netzach v'hanora v'nora osecha. What that phrase is doing is taking each of these descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hakel HaGadol, Hagibor v'hanora, and amplifying the phrase a little bit. Hakel, why is, in what sense is God called Kel? V'sa'asumos uzecha, because you have incredible might. The word Kel is a description of God as being mighty. Right? We have many names of God, but you know, Kel is a description of God being mighty. Hagadol, in what sense is God great? V'chavod shemecha, because we owe a lot of honor to your name. Hagibor, God is mighty. Lonetzach, forever. In other words, you know, unlike a human being, you can have a guy who's a mighty fellow, very strong fellow when he's 25, but you know, at 95, you know, he's not necessarily going to win the wrestling match, right? But no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Kivyachol is Hagibor Lonetzach. He's mighty forever. Sahanora Benora Osecha, you are awesome because of the awesome acts which you perform. So in other words, in a very encapsulated form, what Nishmas does is it takes these four descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kel HaGadol, HaGibor V'hanora, and it gives us a little bit to think about as to what they mean exactly. In fact, some of the Rishonim point out that the version of Nishmas which we say, in their opinion, seems to have been flipped around a little bit, and would make more sense if we just moved some of the sentences around. So when we say Hakel HaGadol HaGibor HaAnor Hakel Elyon Konei Shamayim Ba'aretz, now in our version of Mishmas, we then go on to say Nehalel Chon Shabechon Fa'ercha, we're going to praise you, we're going to bless you, and the like. Say these Rishonim, no. Right after you say Hakel HaGadol HaGibor HaAnor Kone Shemaim Va'aretz, you should go straight to say Hakel V'Sasumo Suzecha Hagol V'Chvod Shemecha, etc. Because that phrase in Nishmas is explaining what Hakel HaGadol HaGibor V'Anora means. And then after you say that, you should say Nehalel Chon Shabechon Fa'erchon Uvarich Hashem Kodshecha Ko'amur L'David Baruchin Avshiyas Hashem Chol Kravai Hashem Kodsho. We will praise you as David HaMelech said. And then we should say, as it says a little bit later on, V'chosuv ramenu tzadikim v'ashem v'yisharim nava se'ila. It says that the tzadikim and the yisharim, praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, those who took him should really be juxtaposed with one another, because they're really saying the same idea. Again, our version of Nishmas is not like that, but some Rishonim say the version we have of Nishmas seems to have some of the sentences a little bit out of order. And it would be better served, actually, if we put them in the proper order. Bottom line, the tefillah of Nishmas is a beautiful one. And again, while we discussed before that there's reason to, you know, to debate as to whether it's appropriate to say Nishmas on occasions other than Shabbos and Yom Tov, one thing which is clear is that Shabbos and Yom Tov is certainly an opportune and appropriate time to say Nishmas. And, you know, it behooves us to take a little bit of extra time on Shabbos, you know, to make sure that we say, and Yom Tov, you know, to make sure that we say this incredible tefillah, to reflect upon its themes, that magnetically the soul is attracted to want to sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to realize that particularly on Shabbos and Yom Tov, that our ability to recognize how much we have to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a function of that Neshama Yetzirah that we get on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Neshama Yetzirah ultimately gives us greater insight into what's really important in life and the obligation that we have to constantly give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything that He constantly does for us. Just everybody, yeah. 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 Yeah, so it's funny because the truth is, you would think offhand that it's a terrible place to change the chazan, right? Because you're right in the middle of the bracha. Basically, for each of these starting points, the fact that the chazan gets up there is really to emphasize the first phrase, right? So in other words, take Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's the most obvious, right? HaMelech HaYoshev HaKisei Ram V'Nisa, we want to emphasize the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech, is the King. on Yom Tovim, we want to emphasize Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, the Hanora, because those phrases, Gadol, Gibor, and Nora, may be tied to the Shlosh Regola, the idea that God is described in three in three different ways. Shochinad Morom v'Kadosh Shema is based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu that ends up describing the greatness of keeping Shabbos. So it could be that that's why the Chazon Davka, you know, says that line out loud on Shabbos. Again, it's not that, you know, we're breaking up the bracha, but we just want to emphasize certain lines, and having the Chazon get up and recite them out loud is our way of, you know, calling our attention to these lines on these occasions. Just I'll make one more point. Most of our shuls, so there's a look at a Zimra Chazon, and then there's a Shacharis Chazon. The truth is, technically speaking, there's no such thing as a Sukkot Zimra Chazon. In other words, that's why in many places they can have a child go up and lead Sukkot Zimra, because you don't really need a Chazon for Sukkot Zimra. In other words, when the Chazon gets up to Shacharis at Shofenad, what it really means is that up until that point, everyone was saying everything by themselves, you know, whether in reality or just conceptually. Right? If we do have a chazan from Sukkot Zimra, his only role is to keep everyone on pace so that we're davening at the same time. He goes to a quote unquote yeshiva shemunya. You know, they usually just announce whatever time Shofinat is going to be. And then you get there, however long before you think it's going to take you to say all the stuff off to Shofinat. You know, half an hour, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, depends how much you plan on saying before Shofinat. But, you know, the chazan getting up is real, you know, the chazan really comes on stage, so to speak, at Shofenad, and he's, you know, really the truth is the chazan really only needs to get up there at the very end of Yishtabach to say the bracha. So the fact that he's getting up earlier is just a way of underscoring, you know, these phrases which we want everybody to focus on. If you look at it like that, it's not as strange as thinking, oh, well, they switched chazanim in the middle of the bracha. Why would they do something like that? No, the chazan really should have gotten up at the end of Yishtabach. Well, we send them up a few minutes earlier to underscore some important ideas which we just want everybody to hear directly from him. Wish everybody a wonderful week, and this is Hashem. We'll see everyone next Sunday. Mm-hmm.